Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, the Century Club. We discuss the rising prospect of living 10 decades. The idea was once confined to science fiction, but now, for a majority of the world's wealthy at least, living for 100 years is simply what they expect. This is one of the findings of a new global UBS Investor Watch, the largest survey of wealthy investors in the world. Given that aging populations is a core UBS long-term investment theme, our panel this week will reflect on the global trend, as well as discussing the key conclusions of the new research. Amongst some of the most striking conclusions that we'll be discussing are how the wealthy demographic values health ahead of wealth, how to best improve planning and portfolio construction to factor in these longer years, and also to shine a light on what the greater longevity of women in particular means in this space. We start with Michael Crook in the UBS Global Wealth Management's Chief Investment Office. He focuses on portfolio and planning. Michael, perhaps first, put this latest report into context for us. Aging's a key long-term investment theme for UBS, of course. Tell us how this report fits into that bigger picture.
This report fits into the longer-term aging theme and the longevity theme because this is the personal side of that theme. We have a pretty massive demographic shift happening across large parts of the world, and this report really focuses on the individual component of that. As effectively the baby boomers continue to move into retirement and they experience a longevity bonus, so they're going to get to live more years after the age of 65 than any generation before them, that's going to have pretty big impacts on the economy and on investment markets, but it's also going to have a pretty big impact on them personally, not only from the additional years that they get in terms of years to enjoy, spend with family, pursue hobbies, but also the impact that they need to think about from a financial planning standpoint, the effective cost of living during those years, how they're going to spend their time, and then healthcare, of course, is one of the big issues that we have to think about when it comes to living longer.
Laura Kane is from UBS Global Wealth Management's Chief Investment Office too, Head of Investment Themes for the Americas. How does aging shape your strategic thinking, Laura?
Aging is one of three major trends that we focus on for our long-term investment recommendations. The other two, just for context, are population growth and urbanization. So this definitely ranks high among our priorities in terms of thinking about the future. And the reason why is that we're seeing this phenomenon of aging populations all around the world. And in fact, we're going to see a 400% increase in the number of people who live into their 90s and beyond over the next few decades. And when we think about the aging of the population, that's really going to significantly change demand for certain goods and services in the future, right? So I think healthcare is among the most obvious opportunities and places where we're going to see increased need, but it also creates need for services like financial planning, retirement homes, retirement care. So there really are a whole host of investment opportunities that we see on the horizon that all tie back to this trend of aging populations around the world.
Now, there are various shifts in people's expectations that the report reflects. There are some really striking findings, aren't there, Michael? One of which is that globally, more than half of wealthy investors expect to reach their century. What do you make of that?
It's optimistic. And there's probably good reasons to be optimistic. I would say that it's better to be optimistic about your personal longevity than pessimistic, of course. We did find that over half, and it's pretty wide a spread between some countries, German investors, effectively three quarters of them expect to live to be 100. In the U.S., that number is only about 30%. So it's pretty widespread. But the way I would frame it is that they're all optimistic. If you were to ask demographic experts, if you're to talk to actuaries about their expectations, they don't expect even 30% of the population to live to be 100. So really, wealthy investors across the board are optimistic.
Now, if you are around a lot longer, you need to amend or recalibrate key strategic investment decisions too, right, Laura Kane?
That's exactly right. So we're seeing investors start to think more carefully about their spending patterns, both before and after retirement, start to calibrate their portfolios more toward long-term investments and really consider what their needs are going to be down the line. We see healthcare costs be a very big concern, even among wealthy investors. In fact, we see that 69% of Americans said that healthcare costs are their biggest financial concern when they look toward the future. So we are seeing investors start to gear their portfolio toward this expectation of increased longevity over the next few decades.
Now, to this broader finding of health being more important than wealth, if you like, some 90% of subjects here said investing in health is more important to them than growing their wealth. Presumably that's significant for you, Michael Crook, and your colleagues, right?
I think it is. It's probably also important to remember that this is a survey of wealthy investors. And I don't know if those findings would hold up if it was a survey of the broad population. I think what we know is that health is correlated with wealth. Wealthy investors tend to spend a lot of money maintaining their health. And I think that's what's coming through in those poll numbers, is that, yes, investors want to live longer, but they want to live longer and have a high quality of life in those years. And that's really what that focuses on. And we see that come through in a couple ways. One that I would really point to is the focus on spending in terms of precautionary measures. So what we see pretty clearly is that investors are spending a lot of money on their healthcare, but they also spend a lot of money on good dietary habits, on exercise, and taking measures to make sure they don't get sick in the first place.
Michael Crook. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at how women's greater longevity is reflected in respondents' feedback to the survey and consider how it should reshape both female and male investors' planning for the future. Laura Kane, let's reflect on the male-female issue here. Some 8 out of 10 women will find themselves alone at some point in this stage of their lives. This picks up on themes that were outlined in another UBS white paper, Own Your Worth, previously. Laura, this is a differentiator that I guess some might perhaps overlook at times.
That is quite a dismal statistic to talk about, but it is projected that 80% of women will find themselves alone at the end of their lives. And this is due to really two things. So one is death of a spouse. We see that women on average are living about 5 years longer than men. So this is a special consideration for women, that their lifespan tends to be even longer than their male counterparts. And also divorce rates. So we're seeing that the divorce rate over the age of 50 has doubled over the past 30 years and now accounts for a quarter of all divorces in the U.S. And then I guess the final component is the women that, in fact, never marry at all. So when we think about these women, they're going to be on their own in terms of providing for themselves financially. So it's really important that they get involved in financial planning and financial decision making earlier on in their lifetime. Because what we're seeing is that 56% of married women leave these decisions to their spouse. And that's not only the older generation, but we're seeing the same trend among millennials and even women who are the breadwinners of their families. So we think it's really critical that women kind of take ownership of their financial futures as early as they can. And I think another interesting point to bring up is that women tend to have special considerations in terms of their financial planning. So they need different kind of services and they have unique needs relative to men in terms of, you know, a lot of women haven't earned as much income over their lifetime as men. A lot of women have to take career breaks or part-time work due to demands of taking care of children and elderly parents. So not only do women need to get more involved, but they also need to be able to access financial services and advisors who are in tune to the unique needs of female clients.
The fact that some 80% of women will find themselves alone at some point in this stage of their lives is certainly arresting, isn't it, Michael Crook?
It's an important factor, both from the financial side, but also, I think, from the communication side. Women still, on average, live longer than men, pretty much everywhere across the world. But that gap has been narrowing. Say 70, 80 years ago, that gap was essentially a decade. Today, it's down to about 3 years. And so I think one of the important data-driven conclusions that probably we don't all quite realize is that we're all going to live longer, but we're going to live longer together. And that's different than the previous generations, where you tended to see usually the female spouse live quite a bit longer than the male spouse. So that's one of the big changes that has some implications in terms of spending, how we think about estate planning, gifting, all of those issues from an investment standpoint. But I also think that there still is a really important communication aspect to this with the either a trusted advisor of the family or with the extended family themselves. We still will have a lot of individuals have a spouse pass away, and then that individual could live deep into their 90s or even to 100. At that point in their life, they tend to need outside support in regards to making sure that they're able to live the life that they had planned for. And I think that's where it's really important that that trusted advisor or their family members really have a clear picture of what their goals were and how they wanted to live their life. Otherwise, it tends to create issues, and because there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of making decisions about care, living arrangements, and those issues. And so that's also a really important part of planning is not only doing the plan to start with, but then communicating it to the people that will be responsible for helping to execute on it.
I guess one way to challenge some received wisdom about investments, for instance, to try and empower women to be more involved with longer-term financial planning within the family, is education. Laura Kane, is education an answer? And actually, to another interesting finding of the report, namely that in terms of longer-term investments, real estate and equities, sure, were two of the top three investments amongst these demographics. But the third of the most commonly held was cash, which is hardly a very practical or reliable long-term holding.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. And I mean, I think the holding of cash a lot of times is kind of, you know, out of fear or lack of knowledge about viability of cash over the long term as an investment. So I think, yes, education can definitely play a role in helping investors to make wiser decisions for their long term planning and not having so much money sitting on the sidelines in cash positions. And I think another important component of education is also just improving investor confidence. So going back to the topic when we're speaking about the special considerations for women, we find that 79% of men are confident in their long-term investment decisions, whereas only 55% of women are. So I think education can play an important role for women in terms of helping them to have that confidence to take control of their financial future.
And in terms of how wealthy investors are allocating or reallocating their wealth in terms of long-term investments, as we've heard, the top asset classes included real estate and equities, but also cash too. As Laura's been saying, that rather provides food for thought, doesn't it, Michael Crook?
I think it's important to remember that these are poll results, right? This is a survey. And so equities and real estate, I think, are valid decisions. And if an investor is thinking about longer term assets, but cash simply is not. And this is one of the areas that it helps us understand where we need to spend a little bit more time, probably simply on the education side. When I think about an investor that's going into retirement, one of the riskiest assets that investor can hold is cash. And that's simply because there's not much of a return associated with it. And there's a very large risk of loss through inflation. And if we're talking about a retirement period that could last 30 or 40 years, that risk of inflation at some point during that period is very large. And so we would not consider cash to be a long-term investment. It's very short-term in nature in that on a day-to-day basis, the value doesn't fluctuate. But on a longer-term basis, it tends to be one of the least effective assets to hold your retirement savings in and retirement investments in. And so that's the type of shift, though, that we see and we want to see is investors thinking a little bit more longer term about how they think about risk and the returns that they need from their investment portfolio, as opposed to thinking on, say, a daily, weekly, monthly, or even 1 or 2 year basis in regards to either trying to time the market or the volatility of the market. That short-term focus ends up being detrimental to long-term success.
Finally, on the program, Michael Crook, I guess it's worth reflecting on the fact that these people we're talking about, these are not numbers. This isn't about bottom line. One of the big takeaways here is that you, as part of UBS, you're not just serving clients. This is a human business. Is that right, Michael?
I think that's absolutely right. And it becomes very apparent when you simply talk to people that are going through those events. And I think we all probably experience them personally with our own families at some point. I guess the most important part of that is making sure that the planning conversation, when we're thinking about the future, that we take the time to be pretty deliberate both on the financial planning side, but also thinking about how we're all going to spend that longevity bonus that we get. And our research also shows that retirees are, in general, happier than the rest of the population, and that's because they have the freedom to spend their time how they want to spend it. But you have both sides of that coin, and what we find is that retirees that have spent a decent amount of time thinking about how they're going to spend their days, what their purpose is going to be, which family members they're going to spend their time with, but also who their friends are going to be in retirement and how they're going to spend that time. Very simple things like, who are you going to go to dinner with? Where are you going to live that enables you to get out and pursue your hobbies? Those, to a large extent, are the factors that drive happiness and retirement satisfaction, more so than the pure financial issues, which are important because they enable those aspects to happen. But the financial side without the personal side doesn't usually lead to great outcomes.
And Laura Kane, if we reflect on that idea with you too, you as UBS not serving just clients or addressing numbers, a human business that's not about the bottom line. There's an absolute need, presumably, Laura, to provide human and, I guess, intuitive advice too.
Yes, definitely. I think a lot of times when we talk about financial planning, we tend to focus on things like returns and how much income people are going to have or their spending capacity later in life. But I think when you tie it back to more tangible goals, it helps to kind of alleviate some of these anxieties for investors in terms of saying, okay, what do you need to budget for? Do you want to be able to take certain vacations in retirement, or are you planning to work during your retirement years? How much money do you want to leave for your children, for your heirs? So I think when the conversation turns more tangible around the goal the particular person has for their, not just their later years in life, but also what they would like their legacy to be, I think that really helps investors to put things in context and helps to put their fears at ease.
And that's Laura Kane bringing us to the end of this 186th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.